That's B.B. King and Tracy Chapman with his iconic The Thrill Is Gone. It's from King's 1997 album, Deuces Wild. Every song on the album features a famous singer or musician. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Wednesday, December the 17th. And President Obama has just announced that the United States and Cuba have agreed to hold talks aimed at normalizing relations between the two countries, ending more than six decades of enmity. Obama's announcement followed Cuba's release earlier today of American Alan Gross, who was arrested in 1990 on espionage charges. The U.S. has agreed to release three Cubans in detention, also for spying. Dr. Gerald Horn will be with us tomorrow to break it all down and tell us what this means. Obama's announcement is thrilling to many who had hoped to see some kind of rapprochement between the United States and Cuba in their lifetimes. But elsewhere in the hemisphere, the thrill is gone about another U.S. president. 4 years after Bill Clinton swooped into earthquake-devastated Haiti with can-do promises and billions of dollars at his disposal to build back better, Haitians rate his leadership and performance as the point man on the internationally backed rebuilding effort an epic fail, and they want him gone. They contend that Clinton has become a major player in the corrupt, anti-democratic political and economic system that Haitians have been fighting against for decades under various regimes that is at the root of their oppression and misery. Veteran journalist Kim Ives, editor with Haïti Liberté, a news weekly serving the Haitian diaspora, joins us today to discuss Haitians' no-confidence opinion of Clinton and the contentious political backdrop in Haiti and outside of it in the United States, against which the routing of the ex-President Clinton is unfolding. Thanks, Kim, for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Eutrice. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, let's talk about this. What has soured Haiti's love for Clinton? When he got there, it was just an almost euphoria.
Yeah, well, it's really a result of his returning with President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 1994 that he got his original credence in the community. And in Haiti, because that was the first time that a Haitian president who had been removed by a U.S. coup, Aristide used to go around making the joke at the time, why has there never been a coup d'etat in the United States? And the punchline is, of course, because there's no U.S. embassy in the United States. In any case, the return of Aristide won a lot of points for Clinton with the Haitian people. But he's essentially, over the past 20 years, since that return, has squandered them. And I would say the straw that broke the camel's back was when he went on the radio this past week in the face of thousands of people pouring out into the streets asking for Lamothe to go along with Martelly, and said that this was the most decisive and constructive government he'd ever worked with in Haiti. And this was just salt in the wounds of the people, or gasoline on the fire, we could say, because here is a prime minister who has burned through $5.5 billion with a B of international aid and money, and
that's Laurent Lamothe,
and the Haitian people are hungrier and poorer than ever. And the fact that they're finally rising up and he would have the temerity to come and tell them that they're all making a big mistake and this is a great government they have really made a lot of people very, very mad. So I'd say Clinton, who usually is pretty savvy and clever in his statements, really, really made a faux pas this week.
Well, let's talk about his recent re-entry into Haiti, because we'll get to the Martelly government in a minute. I wanted people to get an appreciation of just what kind of role Bill Clinton has been playing in Haiti recently, and even before now in his administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has been the head of what they call the interim Haiti construction or recovery commission, IHRC, which was set up after the earthquake in 2010. He was, in fact, the UN's point person on Haiti prior to the earthquake, but the earthquake elevated him to a new status, or they sort of retreaded the title, and which is special envoy of the UN's security, the UN accountant, the names left me, but Ban Ki-moon's representative in Haiti. And then in that role, he headed this commission, which basically received in the spring of 2010, of $10 billion worth of pledges from nations around the world to invest in Haiti and help it rebuild, build back better, as you said in your introduction. He co-chaired this commission with Jean-Max Bellerive, who was the prime minister of former Haitian President René Préval, and the money essentially went into what that of which came, what money was spent, which is, and a lot of it basically got lost on the way or lost in the process, went to build back sweatshops and luxury hotels. Well, this was precisely the program of quote-unquote development that Jean-Claude Duvalier had back in the early 1980s that the Haitian people rose up against back then. So here we were, 30 years later, getting the exact same program, which basically does nothing for the Haitian people. Yeah, you have more expensive hotel rooms because supposedly you want to be like the Dominican Republic next door and have more sweatshop jobs because you want to be like the Dominican Republic next door, but it does nothing for the Haitian people in terms of meeting their daily needs for food and housing. So in comes Martelly, and they, of course, have a love fest with Clinton. President Michel Martelly, sorry. And President Michel Martelly and Clinton, their slogan was, again, exactly the same of that of Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier back 30 years ago: Haiti is open for business, and talk of making Haiti the Taiwan of the Caribbean. In fact, this is precisely what they see for Haiti. They want this pool of 10 million people to be a cheap labor a haven and heaven for U.S. businessmen to make American electronics and underwear and clothing. So this is essentially the role Clinton has played in Haiti, is to supposedly be this enlightened representative of the enlightened bourgeoisie of the U.S., who would come and, as the slogan of the Clinton Global Initiative goes, they would do well doing good. That is, essentially, Clinton's vision is that capitalism, enlightened capitalism, can save the world and get rid of poverty, et cetera, kind of the notion of the UN millennial goals. And you know, the Haitian people tolerated this for a while with Clinton and then tolerated for a little more with Martelly, but they have recently come to the rude awakening that it is impossible. They're going absolutely nowhere. In fact, they're going backwards, and that is the source of the uprising today in Haiti, which is being called Operation Burkina Faso, because they want to do what was done in Burkina Faso in ousting Blaise Compaoré and get rid of Martelly.
And how does Bill Clinton, the point man on the UN initiative, differ from Bill Clinton, the president? How are the policies different, or is it pretty much the same as it was? And how would you compare Bill Clinton as president, his foreign policy or his policy toward Haiti, and now as a former president and point man for an international initiative?
Well, there was the famous statement that Clinton made before the U.S. Congress, and in fact before myself, in giving a mea culpa for sponsoring a neoliberal push into Haiti, particularly in the domain of rice. Haiti used to grow its own rice, 80% of its own rice. Now it imports 80% of its own rice, because basically during the years that Bill Clinton was president of the U.S., he sponsored a policy of dumping of U.S. rice from rice farmers in Arkansas, as he himself has recognized, who with mile-wide-long combines can produce rice a lot more cheaply and efficiently than a Haitian peasant with a hoe. And so this destroyed Haitian rice production. And now, as the representative of the Secretary General of the United Nations, he has said, oh, this was a terrible thing I did. I didn't understand. I thought we could leap over the level of agriculture and go direct from whatever he considered Haiti to be to industrialization. And so he's come back with this notion that he was totally aware and sensitive to the Haitian people's demands and critiques of his previous policies. But the fact is that he's basically played the same role he did then, that of handmaiden to international capital, which has been seeking to penetrate into Haiti really for the past 211 years of its independence. And one of these domains I should mention is in mining. I think we talked about that in a previous show with you, Utrice, opening up mines, particularly in the Haitian north, where there remains veins of gold dust and copper and silver and even uranium, they're saying. This was really Clinton's role, was to bring in and provide the sort of a smiley face on this brutal penetration of mining companies, many of them Canadian and many of them American too, U.S., who would go in and take advantage of this fire sale in Haiti, particularly after the earthquake, and with this mafia, there's really no other word for it, in power in Haiti. So that was Bill Clinton's role.
Now, when Bill Clinton was heading up this effort, the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission, the IHRC, which you just mentioned about, the U.S. really was the leader of this effort. And this was at a time when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. So technically, he was reporting to his wife.
That is correct. And it was actually kind of interesting to even watch the body language on the stage at the UN in March 2010, when the original conference was held, World Conference. All nations were there, and Huge speeches were made about how transparent it all was going to be. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton both shared the dais, and I think Ban Ki-moon sat between them, and it was both one of those things where, you know, Bill Clinton was sitting looking at about 11 o'clock and Hillary at 1 o'clock, and, you know, it was just this incredible body language going on there. But anyway.
But I raise that to say, basically, here we have a blatant issue of conflict of interest here.
Mm-hmm.
And we should have had some pretty huge alarms going off as to if the president or the former president of the United States is heading up this effort, which is supposedly international, but the U.S. is taking the lead on it, and his wife is now Secretary of State, and the money is coming through the U.S., the aid department, USAID. She is overseeing that.
Right.
Who, therefore, is in charge of basically accounting for where the money is going, how it's being spent? And we do know that we've had many, many issues about exactly that problem. Where is the money going? How is it being spent? So whose job is it now to account for all of that money?
Well, the thing is, things went in a way, Utrecht, from bad to worse, because theoretically, there was supposed to be this website that the UN, that the IHCR was going to set up, and we were going to be able to see what each country pledged, how much they gave, where the money went, what project. All that went completely into the water, as could be foreseen. And we should just take a step back and remind the listeners, as I think we've talked before, Bill and Hillary Clinton supposedly have this special relationship to Haiti because they went on their so-called honeymoon back when they were married back in the 70s or whenever. That also is, as usual, a half-truth because it wasn't their real honeymoon. It was like a second honeymoon they went on, or a second trip shortly after they got married. And so the other thing to remind the listener is that Hillary Clinton was really the one who shoehorned in Martelly, because the original candidate in the runoffs in 2011 was a guy called Jude Celestin, who was in some ways the protege of former President René Préval, who had come in second to Mirlan Maniga, who had come in first, another sort of perennial presidential candidate, or her husband was too. So Maniga and Celestin were supposed to be the runoff, but the U.S. came in, they mobilized the OAS, they overrode the Haitian Electoral Council, and then in the midst of Egypt blowing up, you had the Egyptian Revolution beginning in January 2011, here came Hillary Clinton down to Haiti essentially to tell President Préval, you got to get your candidate out of there, and we're putting in Michel Martelly, who, according to my sources in the Provisional Electoral Council, who again was overruled, said that he came in about sixth, but they said no, he came in a close third, and so after they ended up sending in an OAS committee to recount the votes, they decided that it would be Martelly and Maniga, who would be in the runoff, and surprise, surprise, Martelly won. I think it's all summed up essentially in the words of the guy who was the OAS representative at the time, the Organization of American States representative at the time, a guy called Roberto Seitenfuss, and he said, the U.S. and the international community came in and not just substituted themselves for the Haitian Electoral Council, they substituted themselves for the Haitian electorate. And so Hillary Clinton has this excellent feather in her cap. I'll be interested to see if she talks about it during her upcoming presidential campaign.
But in the meantime, as the money is rolling in,
mm-hmm.
a number of consultants favored by the Clintons made out like bandits, and literally like bandits.
Yes, well, that ironically was a song of the former Lude Compa singer known as Sweet Mickey, who was President Michel Martelly's former persona, and he used to have a song called Legal Bandits, and that's exactly what the people began to call the Martelly group, which would include Clinton, legal bandits, because essentially they found ways to siphon off millions, maybe billions of dollars. And this was not only from the $10 billion of earthquake money coming in, doing it through things like hiking by 400% the per diems on presidential trips, which used to be about $500 a day, and turning it into $20,000 a day. So they, you know, filled their coffers this way. So this was what they called the legal banditry. And some of it came, in fact, ironically, sadly, from the Petrocaribe account, which is essentially a fund set up in conjunction with Venezuela just before Martelly came into power, where 40% of the money that should be paid to Venezuela for the oil it provides at very cheap rates, when oil was expensive before it dropped down to its historic lows, that would go into a big fund which was kept there to invest in social programs. And essentially what the Martelly group did was they would set up these bogus aid agencies, which would supposedly distribute with names like Food for the Poor or Houses for the Poor Mommies or Give Me Light, Give Me Life. And they'd put their cronies at the head of these agencies, do a couple of show distributions of food or whatever it was, and then afterwards you would have these heads of it getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in salaries. So this is the legal banditry which more and more the Haitian people became disgusted with. And Clinton, of course, also got in on this picture, just not to forget him, particularly as an investor in this obscenely opulent hotel built up in Pétionville, where a room could be had for the cost of $350 a night in a country where a lot of the population has a yearly income of $350. So this was, again, seen as some form of legal banditry.
Mary Anastasia O'Grady of WallStreetJournal.com wrote in an article that the largesse, of course, was quite democratically enjoyed, including by members of Congress, even, and high-ranking Democrats, including Joseph, she writes here, the Clinton administration did nothing to contain abuses. Instead, a company called Fusion, run by Democrats, including Joseph P. Kennedy II, Mac McClarty, who had been Clinton White House chief of staff, and Marvin Rosen, a former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, went into the long-distance telephone business in Haiti Teleco, the government-owned monopoly. So we saw that the generosity of these funds also rewarded very highly and well-connected, well-placed Democrats here in the United States.
Right. And O'Grady has written a number of pieces over the years. She is essentially some kind of Republican operative. And sometimes the internecine rivalries between the different branches of the U.S. ruling class, between the Democratic branch and the Republican branch, can be very illuminating, because, of course, at the Wall Street Journal, they have resources that far exceed the investigative war chest of Haiti Liberté, for example, as we can imagine. And so, in fact, O'Grady has gotten some stuff, but she's also gotten a lot of stuff wrong. She's relied on a woman called Lucy Komisar, who was making all kinds of charges specifically against Aristide. That was, of course.
But on this one, she's right.
Yeah, on this one, she's right in part. I mean, I take with a grain of salt because, I followed up on one of her things on Lucy Komisar and called some of the sources that she claimed to have learned stuff. And they said, I never said anything like that. The woman's a complete liar. Of course, O'Grady was reprinting some of her stuff. So I put it with a grain of salt. But fundamentally, yes, O'Grady, I hate to say it, I never thought I'd find myself agreeing with her on much. But she's pretty right on this one.
This was quite illuminating.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like when you find yourself, you know, having to agree with Sarah Palin or something. So, you know, what are you going to do?
We're talking with Kim Ives, a veteran journalist and editor with AT Liberté, a newsweekly covering the Haitian community in Haiti and the diaspora. We're talking about the thrill being gone about Bill Clinton and his role in helping, allegedly, reconstruct Haiti 4 years after the devastating earthquake, and we find that there are more questions than answers. Let's turn now, Kim, to the political context in which all of this is happening. Right now in Haiti, it's turmoil. People are in the streets. Mm-hmm. We have had reports of people being shot now in terms of the protests, and the response by the state to the protesters in the street has become a bit lethal. We are hearing also that there are moves and pushes from the Obama administration trying to get the Haitian government to do something to indicate to the rest of nation that, yes, they're taking the demand for elections seriously. But what is happening here? What is the state of affairs in Haiti now? What is the political situation?
Well, it's essentially the crumbling of the Martelly regime, as we saw on December 13th, Saturday, Prime Minister Laurent Lamothe resigned, as we said at the top of the show, and had tendered his resignation. Now, this is kind of a sacrifice play. It was something which was more or less foreseen. This has often been done in Haiti, where the prime minister, who is appointed or named by the president, approved by the parliament, has fallen. Lamothe, who was Martelly's former business partner, is a rather successful telecommunications businessman, essentially.
Telecommunications seems to be very, very popular.
Very popular. Well, that's one of the main things that works in Haiti is, you know, the telephone. People calling their cousins up in New York and Miami, telling them, send more money because we're starving here. So you have, you know, a lot of money in the telecommunications and in money transfer. I mean, 55% of the Haitian GDP is created through remittances coming from people who move to the U.S. and participate in the working class here and then, you know, send their money home. So phone calls and money transfer are the two ways that people basically keep the coffers of the country full, but it wasn't enough for the Martelly Lamothe group, and they came up with the idea of, in fact, taxing every money transfer, $1.50, and every phone call, 5 cents a minute. And so they created this huge account, again, legal banditry, which never had any accounting done for it, of millions and millions of dollars, billions probably over the course of the 3 years it existed, and was funneling money to the regime.
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt, but as you said that, didn't Bill Clinton also transfer to Aristide untold millions from those same accounts?
No, that was another. That was actually something else. That was okay. There was a and this way it gets into kind of very arcane telecommunication wheeling and dealing. But Teleco had a deal with an international phone company, which provides, you know, lines and calls between the country. Company called IDT. People might have used the IDT calling cards. And they claimed that essentially it was a complaint on the part of AT&T and Verizon and the big boys against IDT, which is kind of a little upstart company, that they were getting preferential rates from Teleco and not that they were not having to pay the same rate that the big boys, AT&T, Verizon, were having to pay for these international phone calls. So this was really what was behind it, and this is what they charged Aristide. Of course, in the investigation we've done into that story, we found that they never really had much to go on to connect Aristide directly with it. Aristide, who often adopted a kind of ostrich policy in the face of corruption in the country. I mean, he did root out some, but there may have been stuff going on in Teleco that he didn't know. Anyway, that's another domain, but this one was very clearly controlled by Lamothe and Martha Lee, this revenue stream coming from the tax, which was done without any parliamentary approval on every money transfer and every phone call. And so this group essentially became fantastically rich, or richer, I should say. Martha Lee was already quite making out pretty well as this one of the lead compa singer acts in Haiti. And Lamothe had, through incredibly sophisticated corruption, extended his telecommunications empire, a thing called NOPIN, for not having to put a PIN number, in Africa, in Latin America. He has a house in Durban, South Africa, for example, and one in Miami Beach. You know, the guy's doing very well. So the two of these two guys who had all sorts of business ventures together in real estate and business essentially came to the head of Haiti Inc. and made off very well. So the people in the beginning said, okay, you know, we don't like how he came in through this illegal election, as I explained, the Hillary Clinton coming in and essentially imposing Martha Lee as president. But let's see what he can do, you know. And even though he'd been one of the cheerleaders of the coup d'etat in the 1990s and the one in 2004, they said, let's see what he can do. And they gave him an awful lot of rope to hang himself. But hang himself he did. And essentially, that's what we're seeing now. You know, Yatrice, the Haitian people are like that. They can absorb an awful lot of abuse. They put up with 30 years of the Duvalier regime. But when they finally rise up and say, this is it, it's not, no more, there's nothing that can stop it. It's just a fire that burns out of control. And this is essentially the fire that the Lamothe and Martha Lee regime finds itself in. There's nothing they can do to make it better. Every concession they give just encourages the demonstrators. Every bit of repression they do, which is what they've been doing the past few days, shooting tear gas, rubber bullets, regular bullets, and killing people and wounding many. And so it's just enraging the crowds more. But the third element that we should bring in that is adding to all this is the UN mission in Haiti, called the UN Mission to Stabilize Haiti. Ironically, there's a oxymoron if you ever heard one. And the UN mission called MINUSTAH has also begun firing on the crowd, and this has renewed the call for MINUSTAH to get out of Haiti. This is now 10 years, over a decade after they came in 2004, immediately following the coup d'etat against Aristide. So that's essentially the call of the demonstrators in the street. Lamothe out, check, that one's done. Martelly out, that's about to happen. And MINUSTAH out.
Is Martelly really about to happen? Is he about to go?
We're going to see what happens in the coming days. But, the way I see these demonstrations growing, the energy, the size of them, etc. Now, there is always traditionally in Haiti around Christmas time a truce. Things go down. This is what happened in 1985 with Jean-Claude. The uprising really began in November when three school kids were gunned down in Gonaïves. And then it went down a little bit and resumed right after Haitian Independence Day on January 1st. And Duvalier was gone on February 7th in 1986. Are we going to follow the same schedule now? We're going to see. Martelly is theoretically going to assume dictatorial powers. That is, he would rule by decree starting on January 12th. That is the fifth anniversary of the 2010 earthquake. On January 12th, terms, the mandates of the parliament, or most parliamentarians, two-thirds of the Senate and all of the deputies, expire. And so the parliament expires, essentially. So we could end up, if he managed to get through to January 12th, we're going to see a situation where it's going to be totally uncharted water. I had originally thought that he would make it through to January 12th and then, like a wounded deer, finally fall a couple of hundred yards down the road. But at this point, given the size of the demonstrations, I think it could happen sooner.
Well, this brings me to the question about the power of demonstrations. We're seeing the power of demonstrations in the United States, what it is doing. It is causing a huge shakeup here, both in terms of the consciousness of what the situation is on ground level with a whole bunch of people that were previously ignored or marginalized. And this same group, along with others, but they form the core of a whole new movement in the United States. Mm-hmm. Similarly, in Haiti, we have more and more people coming out in the streets. We have more and more people affirming their rights and doing so rather, I would say, brazenly, knowing the history, of course, of the willingness of the state to just come down on them with a ton of bricks, but still they face up to the administration this way. And particularly because, in a sense, Martelly was one of their own. Here was a well-known singer, and he was very, very popular. He becomes president, and everybody thinks, well, he's one of us. He understands us better than anybody else. He's not of the elite. And now we're seeing what has happened there, what is going on, and now they're demanding that he leave. But what is considered to be the alternative at the moment? I know the United States, John Kerry, has been making demands, as if they're in a position to do that,
right,
to demand that there's some election that should be scheduled soon. What's going on with that?
Right. Well, essentially the proposal, and that's been on the table really since last September, is for there to be a council of state that takes power. The Dessalines Coordination, a group called COD, which also means rope in Creole, proposed this at a forum last September when there was a similar uprising. I could almost say a dress rehearsal for what we're seeing today last autumn, from September through December. And the state council would then have put a government which would be headed by the chief justice or one of the justices of the Supreme Court. So that's more or less the formula that happened in 1999, for example. Excuse me, in 1989 and 1990, when the dictator Prosper Avril fell, and they put in a state council with this chief justice, and they had the most fair election when Haiti was left to its own devices that it's ever had in history. Of course, at the time even, the UN was also pushing to come in and say, oh, let us oversee this, let us be the umpires in all this. And the Haitians said, no, no way. Of course, they already have their foot in the door now. So that is why this same conference that COD held back in September 2013 said that in addition to Martelly and Lamothe being out, we also have to have MINUSTAH out so they can't come and muck up the works. Because, in fact, it was MINUSTAH who was making the phone calls to Martelly and Maniga after the wake of the 2010-2012 presidential vote to basically be the kingmaker and queenmaker in Haiti. So basically, the U.S. and its handmaiden, the U.N., have to be out to allow Haitian democracy and sovereignty to fully exercise their rights. So that is essentially. Now, just the one thing I would say is there's been a lot of proposals because there have been a lot of sort of discussion and meetings among the opposition groups to have the 10 senators who remain, because some of the senators had 6-year terms, that they would continue on as the sort of core of whatever state council there was. So the 10 remaining senators of the 30 that normally are there would provide the sort of core of this state council.
But I thought Martelly had threatened to remove them as well.
Yes, he had, because theoretically they don't, you know, they won't have a quorum. Theoretically, the parliament would not really be able to function. So those 10 remaining senators, who are the only ones with any mandate left on January 12th, would not be able to do anything. But again, in what's being proposed, because right now it's basically the street that's deciding things. And so Martelly and the U.S. behind him are trying to push back against the street. But, you know, as they say in Creole, Haiti c'est terre glissée, Haiti is slippery ground. And so the U.S. has often had trouble putting its people and its options in place in Haiti. They managed to do it with Martelly. They failed to do it in 1990 with Marc Bazin, who was sort of the U.S. candidate previously. And it's very interesting in the WikiLeaks documents that, you know, we published back in 2011. We actually did a WikiLeaks story this week. You can see how the U.S. State Department and embassy are constantly trying to push forward their favored candidates. So, unfortunately, we don't have the most recent cables at our disposal, so we don't know who exactly is the horse they're betting on. But one of the ones we're expecting is a guy called Jean-Max Bellerive, who was the sort of a disciple of Marc Bazin, who was the prime minister of former President René Préval. And so they may try to bring him back to sort of sell some sort of election that the U.S. and U.N. could keep control over.
Would that be Marc Bazin, the banker?
Yes, Marc Bazin, the banker, who has, you know, since died in the past year. But his...
I'm being facetious.
Oh yes, okay.
Of course it would be Marc Bazin, the banker.
Yes.
This brings us back to capitalism and the capital. And when you talk capitalism and capital, you're talking Clinton's.
Yes.
Now, we on your checkoff list, you say that, well, of course, Lamont is gone. The prime minister is gone. Mm-hmm. He's resigned. You are iffy with the president, Michel Martelly. He may or may not be leaving soon, but mm-hmm. you think more so he would be leaving because the pressure is now increasing.
Right.
Because the capital flow and the capital projects are in danger. This is very, very distressing news to the Clintons, who are all about money.
Right.
So in the middle of all of this, what is happening to these projects? Is there any movement at all, or is Clinton also going to be added to your list, your short list of people who soon will be going?
Well, no, of course, Clinton is there wringing his hands, saying, oh, this is terrible. It's going to make, investors not want to come into Haiti because it's unstable. Why are the people doing this? It's so self-destructive. They should, behave themselves, et cetera. But as, you point out, I mean, the parallels with the uprising in this country against police brutality, against the low wage of fast food workers, and now it's spreading to the drug stores and all the other chain stores, Walmart soon probably too, everybody. There's this synergy happening where the entire working class being touched by the electric prod of repression or oppression or exploitation are just coming into this huge genie out of a bottle. And it's the same thing happening in Haiti. So it's quite remarkable to see this international uprising happening. Of course, it's on the watch of our own Neville Chamberlain-like president, who is also wringing his hands and is in some ways a protege of the Clintons. And, I think that, we're going to see more of the sort of fascist spokespeople and responses come forward. We see the Bush is getting ready in the wings, and the Christies and the Perrys and so forth, all looking at this sort of rubbing their hands together, saying, "Ah, good, we can come in there with our drones and Black Hawk helicopters, and put all these people in their place." But to me, we're moving into a really a sort of a historic moment of popular uprising, and Haiti, as usual, is leading the way.
But you still didn't answer the question, I am afraid.
Oh, about
is Clinton on that list? Is going to? Is the pressure by the Haitians and the disaffection and dissatisfaction of Haitians going to be so intense that he would likely give up and walk away?
Well, I'll tell you, Utrice, I spend most of my week in the Haitian community here in New York. Sometimes I'm in Haiti, but usually I'm here in New York. And that's a tremendous barometer. And here, there used to be a kind of a grudging acceptance of Clinton. After that remark last week, where he said that Lamont was the best prime minister, the best government he ever worked with, every single person I would visit, and these are, small business people and community organizations and you name it, everybody had nothing to say, but Clinton is a son of a gun and he's got to get out. We don't want to hear him, see him. We don't want to see his face anymore. So, yes, if I didn't answer it, it's because I thought it was so patent. Clinton is no longer welcome in Haiti.
He's no longer welcome. Let me ask about this period that we're in, and you commented about the synergy, and you commented about the Haiti leading the way.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that we don't know that Haiti is leading the way? What's with the media coverage of something happening in our hemisphere so historic, as you said, and I agree with that, that we don't hear about Haiti, we don't know about Haiti, and we don't know about the significance of the struggles going on in Haiti?
Well, I heard in the intro that you're going to have Gerald Horn tomorrow, and he's going to be able to speak, I think, with his exceptional eloquence and articulate nature to this. But Haiti as the first and last successful slave revolution, coming just 25 years after the successful slave owner's counter-revolution in the U.S., as he outlines brilliantly in his book, 1776, Counter-Revolution. Haiti has been a pariah. It has always been a country which has been demonized. It's voodoo, it's savage, it's dark, it's terrible. It's so it's always been isolated and victimized, I could say, by the first world countries, that is Europe and the U.S., and in many ways, it is the other pole of the hemisphere, almost more than any other country, the country founded by slaves as opposed to the country founded by slave owners. And again, it was the first country in 1915 to mount a strong guerrilla resistance to U.S. Marine interventions going on around the hemisphere. It was the first country in 1990 to elect its own president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, in the face of the U.S. Funded and backed and muscled candidate Marc Bazin. And now it may be the first country in the world to kick out a UN proxy force. There are about 12 of them now deployed around the planet, mostly in Africa, which is nothing more than a sort of junior varsity occupation force for the United States or France or England in the world. So Haiti has always played this role, but because of the bad press it gets since the time of its independence in 1804, it's never really seen as sort of the vanguard nation that it's historically been.
Well, I want to thank you so much for this incredible history and civics lesson that you're giving us today here, Kim. It's been a fantastic tour. But it's very important for people to understand, too, that as this country is subjected to such oppression and misery, and yet there is so much money being made off of that. Mm-hmm. And we have... And this is the reason I wanted to discuss Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton mm-hmm. today, because, you know, these folks are not normally drawn into a discussion about the misery and oppression of, mm-hmm. of any country, let alone especially Haiti. But here we have a blatant example of how people with a very capitalist bent mm-hmm. Basically have been fleecing a country and subverting democracy and all the things that they say they revere here in the United States while on American soil, all the things they revere, they set aside when they step on Haitian soil. Mm-hmm. And we just needed to know that there was an accounting just the same, and the accounting is being done by the people of Haiti, and they want Bill Clinton and his initiative to pack up and get out.
And I think it just one little other historical parallel. I mean, Clinton is in many ways the modern and, of course, very watered-down version of FDR in the U.S. And FDR had his own relationship with Haiti. He claimed to have written the Haitian Constitution that was imposed after the first U.S. Marine occupation from 1915 to 1934. He used to brag about that. But here was again the supposed leader of the enlightened U.S. bourgeoisie, much as the Clintons are supposed to be. These are the ones who, really can tweak capitalism so that it will be useful or helpful to people. But fundamentally, they are constantly being undressed by Haiti, just as the Haitians kicked out the U.S. Marines in 1934 during FDR. They're doing it now under the Clinton control period of 2014. So I think we really do have to thank the Haitian people for undressing these false saviors.
Thank you so much again for being with us. A great, great hour that you spent with us today, and we are so grateful for your expertise and your experience. What's your story this week in Haiti Liberté?
Well, the two are, one, of course, the headline of the issue that came out this morning. That's why I'm a little at a loss for words. My vocabulary doesn't always fire the way it should on Wednesday mornings. But as Lamothe resigns, police and UN fire on swelling demonstrations demanding Martelly to step down. So that's kind of a wrap-up. And the other one we have is kind of the beginning of a series we're doing on the WikiLeaks cables, the gift that keeps on giving, show how Martelly's communications minister, Rudy Harry-Vaux, has been a close contact of the U.S. Embassy for the past decade and has been very instrumental in bringing about a lot of the policies that we see happening. So those are the two lead stories in English. And, of course, we have many, many other articles on Haiti and the international scene in French and Creole. So check it out at HaitiLiberté.com if you're interested.
Thanks so much. Take care. Talk to you again soon.
Okay, so long.
That brings us to the end of our program today. I hope that was a sufficient backgrounder for you, so the next time you see Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, you'll know that they have had a direct hand and continue to have a direct hand in the misery and oppression of Haiti. Coming up next, Richard Wolff with Economic Update. You want to also take some time, drop me a line or two at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know how these programs are resonating with you. And on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. I want you to set aside January, this Friday, January the 9th. We are going to spend a wonderful evening together. I would love to have your company as we celebrate and elevate a wonderful, wonderful man, a great historian, Dr. John Henrik Clark, on the occasion of the 100th year of his birth, the centennial of his birth. Of course, he passed away some years ago, but his work lives on, and his contribution lives on. So we want to make this the start of a great centennial year, celebrating a lot of his work, and there will be new books coming along and so forth. But set aside Friday, January the 9th at 7 o'clock. It will be held at Convent Avenue Baptist Church, and yours truly have been charged with trying to coordinate this thing. And I want to know my peeps are in the house, so send me a note on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Let me know if you're going to be in the house, all right? January the 9th, Friday at 7 p.m. As always, a great, great pleasure and an even greater privilege to be in your company. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget, Gerald Horn.